Gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to this first formal session of the Philadelphia Society regional meeting. We're very delighted that you can be here at 8:30 in the morning in particular. I would certainly like to thank the Philadelphia Society for inviting me. I suppose I should introduce myself. I'm Brad Watson of St. Vincent College in Pennsylvania. Inviting me to this Philadelphia Society meeting, in particular, to chair this panel. The meeting, of course, is themed to the pursuit of truth inside and outside the academy, and we're here to reflect on the theme, the liberal arts, civic virtue, and character formation in this panel. And I'm delighted to have with me on the panel, and indeed in the room, some old friends, and I hope to make some new ones in the time I'm here. I'm going to introduce my old friends in a moment. But first, I'd just like to say a few words to set the stage for this panel and lay some questions on the table for the panel. As I said, the theme of the panel is the liberal arts, civic virtue, and character formation. We often associate each of these three human goods to varying degrees with the American Academy. That is to say, they are goods that might, and we tend to think should, be cultivated inside the academy. And in our most optimistic moments, we can perhaps even convince ourselves that they still are. I sometimes fall victim to such bouts of optimism myself. But they're infrequent, and they don't last very long. As a conservative, of course, optimism is not permitted me, but hope springs eternal. But what can be the status of these goods in the American university, which, as Peter Wood of the National Association of Scholars has put it, I think Peter's in the audience somewhere, there he is. It's my longstanding practice, as some of you might know, to flatter only those who are present and to criticize only those who are absent from any meetings. So I'm glad Peter is here, as I quote him. Peter has said, the American university has become too big, too administrative, too diffuse, too fractured, too pluralistic, too unaccountable, too corrupted, too legalistic, and withal too expensive to have a genuine idea of itself. It instead has a marketing plan. In this view, the American university is not so much evil or even derelict as it is vulgar, simply uninterested in forming the souls of citizens who in turn would support the regime, which in turn would support the university as we have come to know it. No, the American university nowadays has been reduced to an institution that simply gets the job done, whatever that job might be, and by whomever the job might be assigned, federal bureaucrats, state legislators, feckless administrators, or politically tendentious faculty. The job of higher education, to the extent it plays any functional, or might we say aesthetic role with respect to our civic culture, is again, in Peter's phrasing, to apply mortician's makeup to the corpse of Western civilization. Certainly, the heart and soul of the enterprise of higher education, the professoriate, cannot be relied upon to cultivate the civic virtues. Professors once believed that students needed models of human greatness, models who certainly would be allowed to speak in their own words, but models that were to be put before the students ab initio by the teachers, by the professors, who took their civic responsibility seriously. Nowadays, professors are more likely to believe, in the words of Peter Lawler, that they're charged with liberating the student from the cave, that is to say, the traditional religious or bourgeois conformity to allow the students to speak for themselves. Yet they must at least halfway know that their empty dogmas of nonconformism or self-creation or promiscuous libertarianism are themselves a large part of the cave of any free and prosperous society. John Agresto, the former president of St. John's College, has noted the increasingly common understanding of the liberal arts as naturally the opponents and critics of whatever society they occupy is so narrow, so diminished, and in many cases so self-destructive a view of the liberal arts that the whole enterprise of liberal education cannot again prosper without its significant rethinking. The liberal arts have become so dogmatic in this view that they cannot even talk any longer of thinking. The rage is now critical thinking. Their aim is not to wonder, not to understand, not to explain, but simply to be critical. The questioning of all orthodoxies and the destruction of all idols has become today the liberal arts' true work. Now, such a teaching about the allegedly subversive nature of philosophy or the liberal arts more generally is usually not so cleverly masked as liberation. Yet it serves, of course, only to reinforce the very prejudices that many 18-year-olds bring with them to college in the first place. And so the false embrace of Socrates, or perhaps better, the embrace of a false Socrates, has led us away from the idea that all philosophy begins in wonder and toward institutionalized arrogance and superciliousness that passes as liberal learning. But the liberal arts are in any case a lesser and lesser part of the American Academy because of the emptiness of the autonomous alternative to productivity that they promote, says Peter Lawler. Professors of humanities have just about put themselves out of business. So it is that American higher education and the souls of American students are torn between philosophical nihilism on the one hand and modern science or business on the other. And increasingly, of course, they gravitate toward the latter. In these disciplines, at least, the student is offered courses that stick to the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And furthermore, mastery of these facts, unlike the liberal arts, seems to ameliorate the human condition in concrete ways, not to mention offer the masters of the facts handsome livings for so doing. So, we're left with important questions, I think. Can the liberal arts be revived under such circumstances? But perhaps more pressingly, should they be? America, after all, is not a land of aristocratic leisure, but of work and productivity. So exactly what civic virtues, in the context of this regime, might the liberal arts inculcate, even if they were to be well taught, or even taught at all? Perhaps civic virtue and character formation are then best left entirely outside the academy after all. And I put a question mark after that. Now, we have a very distinguished panel with us here this morning to address perhaps some of these questions and some of their own devising. To my far left is Russ Neely, who teaches in the politics department at Princeton University. Russ has written on a wide variety of topics, from the philosophy of Ludwig Wittgenstein to the decline and revival of liberal learning. Next to Russ is Richard Gamble, who holds the Anna Margaret Ross Alexander Chair in History and Political Science at Hillsdale College. Among his recent books is The Great Tradition, Classic Readings on What It Means to Be an Educated Human Being, published by ISI Books. And to my right is Hans Zeiger, who is a senior fellow with the American Civil Rights Union. Hans is the author of two books, Reagan's Children, Taking Back the City on the Hill, and Get Off My Honor, The Assault on the Boy Scouts of America, and numerous popular press and public policy articles. And Hans is just commencing his PhD in political philosophy at the Claremont Graduate University. Each speaker will have no more than 20 minutes to speak. Part of my job, my main job, in fact, is to be timekeeper, so I'll try to keep them to that. So we have some time for questions at the end. And we'll go in the order in which I introduce the speakers, beginning with Russ.
Okay, well, thank you.